Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast, episode 49. This is the go-to podcast for all things audio drama production, as you might have gathered by our less than cryptic title. If you're a new listener, welcome. It's great to have you on board. Why not get yourself over to our website at audiodramaproduction.com, where you'll find all our previous episodes, as well as articles, equipment guides, and production resources. I'm Matthew, and things are a little bit different this week, as have been in recent episodes. Myself and Robert didn't meet up to record in the car, as we've got a couple of excellent interviews to play for you today. Robert will be on the show a bit later on, talking about our new audio drama anthology series, Valenhai, and you'll find out how you can get involved yourself as a scriptwriter, voice actor, artist, or maybe, after hearing this episode, a music composer. And composing music is the subject of the day. If you've ever produced an audio drama before, I'm willing to bet you a signed copy of Sister Act 2 Back in the Habit that you've used the works of a certain Mr. Kevin MacLeod to score it. The man behind Creative Commons music site Incompetech.com probably appears in more audio drama credits than anyone else in this medium, and we're delighted to have him on this week's show. When we recorded this chat, I had planned for it to be a bit of a quickfire interview. New York, the place where Kevin was recording from, seemed to take this literally, judging by the amount of fire engine sirens in the background. In any case, you'll hear that chat continues after we had planned to wrap it up. We ended up talking more about audio drama, Kevin's workload, Patreon, and how to go about actually working with him for your up-and-coming audio drama projects. Before we get to Kevin's interview, though, how about another interview with another composer called Kevin? This isn't us trying to confuse you. It just so happens that we met musician and all-round good egg Kevin Hartnell through John Ballantyne of Campfire Radio Theatre recently, and we've been privileged to have him working on creating a vast library of fantastic music for Valenhai. So Kevin's on the show talking about composing music for audio drama, then he'll be followed by Kevin, who's on the show talking about composing music for audio drama. After that, I'm going to play you the Valenhai trailer that we knocked up recently. That actually features the musical talents of Mr. Hartnell, and a word of warning if you're driving the kids to school, some scenes of suggested violence. That should be about 40 minutes in though. If your school run lasts that long, you might want to consider moving house. Anyway, that's enough from me. Let's get to these interviews.
Hi everyone, my name is Kevin Hartnell. I'm a musician and a producer for Overlook Hotel Records here in Cincinnati, Ohio. I've been a musician almost my entire life. I love audio drama, and currently I'm working on music for Campfire Radio Theatre.
Welcome to the show, Kevin. It's great to have you on and to have a musician on at last.
Well, thank you very much, Matthew. I appreciate it.
So I know nothing, literally nothing, about music. I've been looking forward to getting a composer on the show for some time now. I really liked your work with the excellent Campfire Radio Theatre. So, how long have you been at the audio drama game?
Well, my first contributions to audio drama happened about 10 years ago. I have a friend of mine, Neil Marsh, up in Boston, Massachusetts, who was producing audio dramas with the Post Meridian Radio Players and performing some of them live. So I contributed some music, and he used them for the Tomes of Terror series and also for PM. Fast forward a matter of years, and I heard about Campfire Radio Theater and contacted John Ballantyne, sent some music over, and he liked what I had to offer, and we've been working together ever since.
Just to take it back a wee bit then, what's your history and background in music? You know, from growing up, and what sort of things did you work on prior to audio drama?
Well, I started things out about 40 years ago. My uncle was the music teacher at the school I attended as a child. He was also a drummer, and so was my grandfather. So I was obligated to sign up for band, and inevitably I became a drummer, a family of drummers. I was also fortunate to take on session work and become a session player in my teenage years, where I learned a lot about working in the studio and fell in love with it. I still love working in the studio. It was about 25 years ago, I believe, where I purchased an old Amiga 500 with an 8-bit sampling audio card and started learning about editing digital audio, manipulation of sound, and mixing, and just became absolutely obsessed with it. And it was around that time, I believe, where I started working setting up sound systems for a haunted house attraction and working on soundtracks there. I also did music for some of their TV commercials. Eventually had work used in film and podcasts and audio dramas and so on and so forth. I've worked on hundreds of songs over the years and just absolutely love working in music. I wouldn't want to do anything else as a career.
So what attracts you to creating music as a storytelling medium?
Well, I've been a fan of horror films since I was a child, and I always enjoyed the creepy music in these films. And so on my own, when I got into writing music, when I purchased the Amiga computer, I got into writing a lot of what I consider kind of creepy music or ambient music or soundscapes of the sort. And it was basically my introduction to trying to emulate some of the composers that I liked. And so there were people like Wendy Carlos, John Carpenter, Goblin, Delia Derbyshire, Popelville, Tim Clark, a lot of artists that I really admired that created music for film and things like that. And when I got into audio drama, I started paying more attention to the music in that because it's such an important part of it. It can really manipulate the whole emotional content of a story. And I was really into a series called Nightfall, and they used a lot of library music from the Select Sound library label. And artists like Klaus Weiss, for example. When I heard that and how much impact that can have on a story, that really lit a fire inside of me. I wanted to also do the same thing. So I would sit in a dark room and try to write music that actually scared myself. Maybe that says more about me than it should, but that's definitely where that came from and how I got into that.
Another good friend and musician, Martin, got in touch recently, and he had some really interesting points that hadn't occurred to me before. Like I say, I'm not musical myself, but he was talking about how in audio, the music is complementing audio as opposed to complementing visuals. Was this something that was quite difficult to transition to, or did you find it was quite a natural progression for you when you were moving into audio drama scoring?
Well, something that was very beneficial for me, I believe, was having grown up listening to audio drama since I was a child. And listening to thousands and thousands of those stories over the years, and being a musician, it's hard not to focus on the music and seeing how that works, how it affects us emotionally. It's interesting in how audio can make its own story, just like lighting in film, where you might use a single spot or you might use a whole array of overwhelming different colors and lighting effects, or maybe you use nothing but ambient light or a single light bulb or no light at all. With music, you can do the same with audio drama in that you can use a simple element. Maybe it's a single note on a piano or a sound effect, or maybe a huge score, orchestral score. And for me, my experience with film was really just creating the pieces and submitting them, licensing them, and moving forward. Not so much like sitting in a booth with somebody like Steven Spielberg breathing down my neck saying, "This is terrible, throw it all away." But anyway, it's one of those things where I try to use, one of my rules of approaches is lagom, which is a Swedish word, which means approximately just the right amount or keeping things in balance, suitable, and just kind of dial it in where I think it needs to be and then pull it back, say 10 or 20%. Make sure there's room and space for everything to breathe, room for the dialogue, and understate it. You know, go from a whisper to a scream and utilize that huge dynamic range to create a stronger impact.
From a producer's point of view, I quite like the thought of having these music beds, if you like. You might have a bed for a chase scene, you might have a bed for a fight scene, you might have a bed for a conversation where everything's peaceful, that sort of thing, like quite an atmospheric soundscape. The big difference, I suppose, between doing that and tailoring pieces of music to very specific scenes is that you're going to get a lot more versatility out of these pieces, aren't you? And on the other hand, if you're always creating, unique scores for each scene, then that's maybe all it's ever going to be used for.
On one hand, if you're creating music specifically for a scene, as a composer, that allows you to work with the dynamic flow of something to create stings or cues that match up with the action in the scene. And that can really illuminate it, really bring things out. And on the other hand, if you're just creating music beds or something like in the case of library music, possibly it might be a little more flexible that way. And so you might create something that's not so focused, possibly, maybe a little more ambiguous, a little bit more bendable. But then again, the producer might be very talented and have the ability to take a piece of music, that a stock music, and just warp it and manipulate it into something of their own. Maybe they're also a musician, and they might have the ability to take something that's created independently on its own and manipulate it into something that's exactly what they need for the show. And I think a lot of people do that anyway. If you have Creative Commons music that's out there, you can take that. And as long as the license allows you to do so, I think the basic CC attribution license gives you the right to remix and edit. So with that, you can actually manipulate the piece and build it into something that fits exactly the way you want it to, if you don't have a composer who can write something specifically for your scene.
So you could score music around a script, or you could score it around already completed audio. Do you have a preference when it comes to that?
Well, if you're fortunate enough to get your hands on that, and you can work, you know, with the producer of the show, that's very, very much the best way to go, because you can help shape the sound to fit things the best, and you can work and interact with those people that are producing the show. And I think overall, the whole thing will benefit from that. But if you don't have that option, then it's a little trickier, but it's not impossible. I know that when I first sent music to Mr. Ballantyne, I actually sent him a collection of tracks, and he handpicked it. He handpicked what he wanted, and, you know, manipulated that into something that worked well for his particular needs. So,
what are you looking for when you sculpt a theme for a scene in an audio drama? What sort of things are you looking to pick out, and what sort of things are you looking to create in the music?
Well, first and foremost would be to take any notes that the producer has, take them on board. If they have very specific direction, then follow that. On a personal level, I try to make an emotional connection with what's happening. And after I've done that, I think about what's going on in the scene. Maybe it's a particular place in the world or a particular time, and consider the instrumentation that might be appropriate or fitting for such a thing. And I sit down in the dark, essentially, and listen and pick out instruments that I think are a good fit, and experiment with that for a while. Take whatever's happening in the scene and see if there's something I can create that will synchronize with that and illuminate it. Not step on it, but actually illuminate it and wrap my work around that to help elevate it from there. That's how I approach it.
We've spoke at length on the show before about how there's fantastic Creative Commons music out there available for use, and it's tremendous stuff that's really great to be able to work with, but as we've said, you hear the same songs pop up in a lot of different shows, and it kind of takes that magic away from the music when you're hearing it all of the time. But of course, the big issue in audio drama is that we're not really making any money at all. So what, aside from passion, is there to encourage musicians to come in and do all this work for next to nothing?
Well, in my case, I'll speak for myself on this, is that I've always loved audio drama since I was a child, so when I saw the opportunity to be a part of it, that was a no-brainer for me. I wanted to do that. If you have someone that perhaps, like here in Cincinnati, we have CCM, it's an amazing school for music. If someone like that wanted to take a stab at this sort of thing, it's possible that a producer of an audio drama series or show might look into local universities and musicians that are trying to establish themselves, you know, someone that might want to take on some free work to build their own portfolio. That's a possibility. And I think that since a lot of people are working with very small or no budgets whatsoever, it can certainly be challenging. If you find someone who's looking for that opportunity to build their portfolio, if you find someone that just loves audio drama, like in my case, I don't mind donating my time. I've been a professional musician most of my life, and I've already been there and did that, and now I'm settled a bit more and have children now. So in my free time, I like to work on music just because it's something I want to do. And so I think it's kind of tricky. I know that there are a lot of people out there that want music. They would love to have original music and all original content. I would say just look around and certainly check with universities. There are just thousands of musicians out there, I'm sure, looking for the opportunity, especially something unique like this. And audio drama is a great challenge where you have to create something where your music can tell a story but not step on the dialogue. And it's I think it's something you just have to take a chance and contact people. Don't be afraid to ask, you know.
In terms of creating your music, what sort of setup do you have? What equipment, microphones, and software are you using?
Well, I would say most of the time I bang two rocks together. it feels like it anyway, but no, I've been working with Pro Tools for about 15 years, and a friend of mine gave me a copy of it many years ago as a gift. And I've been using that since. And right now I think I'm using version 10. Yeah. And I use a lot of various plugins, some VSTs, virtual studio technology. I use samples. I create my own samples, do some field recording. I also have a Korg Triton. It's a classic that I've been using for quite a few years now. I have a drum kit, a lot of percussion instruments and guitars, bass, things like that. And I also have a Zoom H6 for any real field recording that I would like to experiment. As far as microphones, nothing too crazy. I actually have Shure SM58s, things like that. I also have Audix microphones. And here's the point I should bring up. If anyone is on a tight budget and they're looking for SM57 or 58s, there's actually a company called GLS Audio that's based out of California. And they make their version of a 57 and 58 that are a lot cheaper. So right around $30 each, I think, which is considerably cheaper. So that might be a tip that might help someone out.
Just going back to your influences, do you have a favorite composer?
Absolutely. I have a handful of favorites. I hope you'll humor me here, but I would say the short list is Wendy Carlos, in particular her work on The Shining and some of the other synthesizer work she's done has been incredible. I really like Goblin, which was an Italian band that worked on Dario Argento films. I like John Carpenter's work. You might have heard his stuff from films like Halloween and The Fog. I like Delia Derbyshire's work. You might have heard her music on Doctor Who, one of your favorite shows. I also like Popol Vuh, Lustmord, and you might have, I don't know if you're familiar with ZBS out of New York, but their composer, Tim Clark, is absolutely incredible musician and has done some amazing things for audio drama with ZBS.
We've talked about people maybe coming into audio drama as composers. What advice do you have for them, especially if they're just getting into storytelling and maybe haven't even tried their hand in short films or anything like that?
Well, I would say even if somebody out there is interested in trying to create music or sound for audio drama, even if you don't have any traditional instruments, if you have something to record with, even with your smartphone, a lot of smartphones have microphones built in, right? So maybe all of them. So if you can take something like that and just listen, open your ears to what's around you, interesting sounds, and capture them. And you can get free software on the internet, open source material that you can work with and learn to manipulate the sound, edit it into something interesting, create soundscapes like that. And don't be afraid to experiment. Just try it all. There's no harm, no foul if you just load it up and take a shot and just work on it. The other thing that I would really recommend, which was really beneficial to me, I feel, was to listen to every kind of music you can get your hands on. I actually was involved in studying folk music and folk percussion for about 15 years. And so that meant a good amount of traveling and research and digging around for folk music from all over the world. And there are some fascinating sounds out there. So if somebody's new to it all, you know, listen to a lot of audio drama. See what's going on there, what you like, what stands out with you, what you connect with. and take a stab at it. Whatever instruments you've got at your disposal, whether if you're a university, there might be quite a few things available. If you have friends that have instruments that are crazy enough to loan them to you, you can do that. So those are a couple of things that I would recommend. Also, learn to play the spaces, because sometimes the simplest approach can yield the most dramatic results. And give yourself more time. John Cleese said, creativity is not a talent, it's a way of operating. And I agree 100%. Give yourself all the space and time you need, within reason, of course, so that you actually get the work done. But give yourself extra time so that you can achieve something that's original, that's a work of quality, something you can be proud of. Just spend a little extra time in there. Take some chances. And also, do it every day. If you enjoy it, go ahead and do it every day. And here's another quote for you. Stephen King said, amateurs sit and wait for inspiration, and the rest of us just get up and go to work. So if you work at it every day, regardless of whether or not you're inspired, you can develop your skills to a point where when inspiration does hit, you're able to do it, to get it on the page or on the hard drive without any real obstructions. It's something you've rehearsed, and you can make it happen.
Kevin, it's been absolutely great to chat. Just before we wrap it up, what are you working on at the moment and where can we find you online?
Well, I'm still working on Campfire Radio Theater music for John Ballantyne, and I'm really enjoying that. And I'm also hoping to put together a soundtrack of material used in the show as well as unreleased pieces from the show as well. And I'm putting together a collection of CC licensed music of my own to share with the community out there for free and spread it around. And I have my own independent label that you can find me at overlookhotelrecords.com, where I have a lot of music there available. And just recently, I was approached by a couple of gentlemen from Scotland. You might have heard of them, Matthew McLean and Robert Cudmore, about possibly creating some music for them.
Don't get involved with them.
You can also find me at kevinhartnell.com. So feel free to contact me.
Yeah, this is Kevin McLeod, and I am a composer. I write music for nearly anything.
Kevin, wow. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you on. You didn't really need to give yourself much of an introduction because absolutely everyone knows who you are. Welcome to the show.
Ah, that's good to hear, because it's really very difficult for me to understand what I do, so it helps that I have a reputation.
You know that we've until very recently, the podcast being going about a year, we've never had any dedicated composers on, and then we had a composer on just recently. We're going to put them both on the same episode. So no composers for a year, and then two come along at once. And you're both called Kevin as well, so it must be something about the name.
No pressure. You're putting me on opposite another composer.
We should have got you on at once and got you to fight or something. great to have you on. We have used your material loads of times, and so has everyone else. And just to sort of start the interview, like, you know, what's your background in music? How did you get into it? What made you so passionate about it? And what led you to being where you are today?
That's like six different questions. Which one do we want to do? What got me into music?
Let's start at the beginning. Tell me about a young Kevin.
All right. Well, a young Kevin had a piano in his house and an accordion and several other things. And I've been playing music since before I can remember. So that was a deal. And then in college, I was going to go to college for electrical engineering, and then I found out you had to take chemistry, so I switched to music, and went to college for music education, and then after that was done, I got a job doing computer programming for like 10 years, and then when that went away, back into music. It always comes back to music.
So composing for fiction or composing for the visual medium, what things really interest you there? Like, do you like to work with fiction? Do you like to work in documentaries? You know, do you have a real preference when it comes to scoring music?
Anything with a good story. Anything with a good story, anything with emotional impact, and that can be a documentary, it better happen in fiction. That's what I really like to work in. Supercharge not necessarily, action fighting stuff, but anything which is, it's got some emotional guts to it. That's what music does. It can grab you by the brain and shake you around a little bit.
When you peruse your catalogue of Creative Commons material on your website, and I speak for everyone listening, we've all pulled tracks from there and thought, this is perfect for that scene that I've just wrote. It almost feels like it was wrote for this scene. Obviously, when you wrote that track, as far as I know, you didn't have any scene given to you, did you? So how do you go about writing those tracks?
Most of those tracks were written for scenes.
Right.
That's the trick. And it turns out that there's some sort of a universal pacing that everything has, which is why music written specifically to, we've got this scene, it's 3 minutes and 22 seconds, and it has, a change at the 2 minute, 22 second mark or something like that, can work remarkably well in a completely unrelated story. I'm sure there's a name for that effect. If there isn't, I'm going to claim it. But we seem to have this, this narrative heartbeat behind things. And so, yeah, a whole lot of the music on my site was written for movies and video games. I've done some audio dramas. Yeah, all that.
So when a writer or producer works with you and talks about a script and maybe what they'd like from it, maybe they present you with a script or play some dialogue, what things are you considering when you get to setting about scoring for it?
I really can't work from a script. I need to have the dialogue. I need to have the audio there. I need to feel that pacing. Because if you go too deep and, the actor isn't going as deep, they're not going exactly where you thought they were going to, it can be comically counterproductive. It's like, yeah, you're just talking about this thing that happened to your wife, and we've got this giant stuff going on in the background, and then you feel a disconnect instead of reinforcing and bringing out what should be there. The other thing that music does primarily is to show you things that aren't going on. Like, you don't know the emotional state of a character, but you can definitely get it from the music. You know if somebody is going into a situation with confidence or if they're going in with trepidation, just how the music is, even if they're acting like they have confidence, but they really don't. So that's something that music brings that really, can it be done another way? Maybe, but it's very powerful.
What are some of the big things you take into consideration when you're working just in audio rather than with a visual medium?
There's actually, I'm trying to think if there are any differences at all. I have a little bit wider berth in creating things if it's purely audio. Because when you're dealing with video, you match the actors, you match the dialogue, you bring in the emotion. And you also have to match what it looks like. What are the shots? Are they like low angle weird things? Is it a sparse shot? Is it dense? Are we doing close-ups? Are we doing far away? And that's one less thing you have to deal with when you're doing pure audio.
So what sort of tools do you use to get the job done? What DAW, what instruments, what microphones, etc.?
Right. Here's super secret. It's just a computer with a whole lot of software on it. I happen to run a Mac. I use Logic, but pretty much anything works.
What advice would you have for someone who wants to do what you do, who wants to compose, maybe not just for audio drama, but for film or game or anything like that?
Okay. The number one thing that I've seen with people starting out, which ends in horrible failure, is starting too big. It's like, I want to do these giant sweeping film score trailer things and like all these, it's like, no, stop that. Start as simple as you can. Work up with simple tools and just work on getting the message out. Whatever your message is.
Is the Creative Commons model the way to go? Do you think you could have been, you know, as successful as you are if you'd never given any of your stuff away on that license?
I don't think so. I know a lot of people who are working very hard to be composers and will never give things away for free. And, you know, to be honest, nobody knows about them. Nobody can, you know, you can't be liked by somebody who doesn't know about you. So, yeah, no, the giving away stuff for free is really the key to becoming known.
Yeah, I suppose when you're literally in the credits of every audio drama, then, you know, people are going to say, who's this guy? And probably visit your site at some point.
Exactly. Well, and hopefully they like me. Otherwise, they were like, wow, this is sucks. I wonder who that is.
So will this model, you know, this Creative Commons model of giving stuff away for free, do you think this is here to stay? Do you think the landscape will change in the near future?
Oh, man, there are battles going on every day. I'm not leaving it. I mean, right now we're in the middle of a copyright battle in the U.S. There's a consideration to make copyright even longer than it is now. And hopefully we're going to be doing a good job of fighting that. But you know what? We don't have the $1 billion of Sony and Warner Brothers and Disney and all the other people who would benefit from a longer copyright term.
So just to wrap up then, Kevin, what are you currently working on, and where can, well, if anyone's living under a rock, where can they find you online?
Well, you can just Google for graph paper and you will find me online. That's the easy way to do it. Or incompetech.com is the website. What am I working on? I just closed out 4 projects. I'm going to take about 2 weeks off now. I haven't had a vacation in, I don't know, 10 years. So we'll see how this goes.
If I remember correctly as well, did you not have a film coming out? Is that out now?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a documentary about me, which is currently being filmed. I don't know how much I'm going to be in it. They haven't really asked me for interviews yet, but I know they're interviewing a whole lot of people for it. So we'll see. We'll see with that. I don't think that'll be out until either very late this year or early next year.
Well, Kevin, it's been great to chat with you. Thanks very much for taking the time, and I hope New York's all right. I hope not too much stuff is on fire out there, because it sounded pretty serious.
Well, it's raining, so it shouldn't really be too bad.
Right, Kevin, well, you enjoy the rest of your day, and thanks again. And when the episode goes out, I'll fire you a wee email just to let you know about it as well.
All right, sounds good. I have questions for you if you've got a moment.
Sure, yeah.
So, yeah, you're in touch with the biz. You know what people are doing, what's going on. What is the trend in audio drama right now, and where do you think, are there any gaping holes in music that could be useful to your genre?
Well, in terms of like what sort of music we're all looking for.
Yeah.
I think like one of the, I don't know if this answers your question at all, but one of the big discussions we have been, you know, having in the community is that as brilliant as all the Creative Commons stuff is, I think sometimes we're hearing the same stuff a bit too much in too many shows, and it can almost jolt you out of the listening experience because you think, wait a minute, that's you know,
that's,
I used that, yeah.
Or Paul, that's Tanner, that's from, yeah, okay.
That's his theme tune, or that's her theme tune. And I think, you know, it's not a problem, but it's certainly something that people are growing aware of. So people are certainly looking to double up with composers and work with them.
Sure.
In terms of, you know, what sort of stuff people are looking for, can you ever have too much suspense? You know, those scenes where somebody's creeping up on somebody or stuff like that. I always find I never have enough of them. I don't know if that gives you anything at all to go on.
Yes, it does. I don't know. I'm not exactly writing as fast as I can, but. So yeah, when you're talking about the theme tunes that people are using, or do you just mean thematic pieces?
Yeah, just like, not necessarily people are using them as their theme tune, but you there's a lot of stuff that you do hear quite a lot. I'd imagine it's just like a lot of your tracks are very good and a lot of people use them because they can. And that's the bottom line, really. They're good and they're available and they're free and people put them in their productions, understandably.
Right, right. So I suppose if they wanted something novel, they could go to some of my less good pieces that people aren't using as much.
I suppose, yeah.
I had considered like doing like a premium section of my site where it would have things which are lesser used, but you know, if everyone subscribes to that, we have the same problem.
Yeah, and I suppose as well, I mean, you are actually, it says on your site, you're available for commission, should somebody want to go down that route. So that's like, that's something as well. I say people are looking to work with composers, hopefully they'd consider you, seeing as everyone's using your stuff. I suppose that just comes down to, do you think maybe people feel intimidated to get in touch with you because you're so well known?
Well, my email inbox would say otherwise. You know, I have a website which is entirely like, it's like a little janky looking. It's like a little homemade to try to make people, I mean, I could make it slick and corporate, but I think giving people, you know, a comfortable starting point is important to communication. And if you're communicating well and creating, then your creations come out better. I hope they're not intimidated. Maybe they are. Hard to say.
I think as well, you know, in the audio drama community, again, there's a lot of discussion going on about the fact that no one is really making any money at the moment or any serious money. We all do Kickstarters and we all give each other this £10. We hand it back and forwards to each other.
At the
same time, you know, we're having this discussion about we need to be paying or at least looking after our talent or voice actors or composers or artists. But we're asking ourselves, how can we do this without really bringing in money? And until we figure out how to properly monetize this thing, people are probably going to be put off by paying lump sums for anything, you know, whether it's art, whether it's music. So I'm wondering as well, like, is there an ongoing payment that could perhaps be made? We've had this conversation of people just paying, whether it's on something like Patreon or whether it's a direct agreement between two parties. Mm-hmm. I mean, would a fee per month and then a certain amount of works that you could have back from that, would that be viable at all?
I don't understand how that would work. So, all right. Here's the deal. Sometimes I'm very, very busy and I'm stacked three projects deep and, you know, even if an interesting project comes in, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
Sometimes I am bored out of my mind and I have nothing to score. And, so I've just got the spare time project, spare time pile of things. Might get to it today, might get to it in a month, might never get to it, but it's always okay for people to contact me and say, hey, I've got this thing. You know, it's a one-off, one-hour deal, so we don't have to keep a schedule on it. If you're looking to score it, here's all the audio mixed down. Here's the list of tracks that I want. If you can do it, do it. And sometimes I will.
I take it there's no, like, there's no seasonal, you know, differences between how busy you are. Like, it's not like you could say May is a quiet month. I take it that's completely unpredictable.
It is. You are correct.
So that makes it more difficult then to, you know, if you definitely knew that March was quiet, then it would be, you know, you'd have the freedom to try and push something, I suppose. But if you say that anything could pop up, then there's no real way of planning it.
There isn't, but I mean, that would be a way of, you know, getting some new music into the into your mix, you know, and hopefully something that worked very well, obviously, with your narrative.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, I think certainly a lot of the community would be very interested in at least approaching you to talk to you about doing some stuff. So
yeah.
I hope that they would have the Would confidence be the right word? Confidence to do that? I'm not sure it would be. But,
well, you know, what else could I do? I guess I could put up, what are those things called? Like a Google survey?
Yeah.
Saying, hey, you know, you don't want to call me on the phone? That's fine. Just fill out this thing, you know, upload your file, you know, if it's got a reasonable deadline, maybe I'll get to it, maybe I won't. You just can't, you know, you can't expect a whole lot from me for free, but sometimes you will get a whole lot from me for free.
I suppose working alone is not easy, is it? I mean, if you're doing everything yourself, sometimes you could be spread very thin.
Yeah. No, I brought on a project manager / super assistant this year, and she's amazing. But I would always rather work on something than nothing. But the problem is, you know, I can't guarantee that the thing will ever be worked on, especially if I don't like it. That's the other. So, you know, you send me something and I'm like, wow, I am not behind this narrative. And, you know, it's just not going to be done for free then.
Well, I could stick this section of the chat on the podcast and invite people. I mean, I don't know whether you want your inbox flooded or whether you'd like to stick up a survey, as you said, and I could direct them to the link, and maybe then you could kind of have more control over the feedback that you're wanting.
No, that's fine. Inbox is fine. Everything comes in there. It'll just get filtered into, you know, I've got a whole bunch of back-end scheduling stuff, and it'll just get thrown into there anyway. So, yeah, inbox is great.
That's what we'll do then. I'd be, you know, it's the least I could do after we've used so much of your stuff over the years. And, great stuff, Kevin. Is there anything else that you were interested in?
I'm absolutely in. I am on Patreon. And I'm interested in getting that going. I'm a big fan of it. And even more than, you know, getting support from it, it's really cool to give support to it, you know, which is why I got into it in the first place. I was supporting several other Patreon people, and it's like, I feel like I'm a part of this now. Every time I put out a video, it's like, I kind of did that.
I was listening to a podcast, a guy, Dave Jackson, don't know if you've heard him. He does a podcast called The School of Podcasting. And he was talking about Patreon, and he was saying that the Patreon money he gets in from his listeners, he actually pledges that to other people. And he said, like, a listener had got in touch and said, look, what's the point? You know, you're saying you want this money to cover your hosting costs, and you're giving it away again. And he said, yeah. Well, look, he said, I went to the cinema the other night and spent, like, you know, $50, and the film was all right. But he says, I listen to all these podcasts, and they're really entertaining, so in a way, I'm just paying for that entertainment the same way I pay into the cinema. So that makes a lot of sense. Like, you know,
it does make a lot of sense, but I wouldn't ever tell anybody that. I get what you're saying though with the sort of deflection donations. It's like, you know, if you pledge this much money to me, I will donate it to this cause. It's like, well, I could have just donated it to that cause.
If you email me, I'll email him.
Yeah. No, you want to support the people you're supporting and then have it end there.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they use it and buy a pack of cigarettes and a six pack of beer, okay, that's what they wanted to do with that money, and that's fine. But yeah, I don't know. I find it weird with the deflection pledges like that. You know, I will give it to other people. Don't do that. Let me live in my own world. I know you're going to do it. You can do whatever you want with the money. I just want to think that it ended with you.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, certainly there should be no obligation. Like you say, once the money's handed over, it's totally up to the person.
Right.
But it's a nice feeling to support somebody, and on Kickstarter as well. Like I say, we hand £10 around to each other. It should be my turn to get the £10 soon. But I'll have it for a month, and then it goes on to the next person.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I don't know. I should warn people. If you do donate to me, I will probably buy bourbon. that's just going to happen.
Well, when you're drunk, you'll probably write more music. So it's a win-win.
It's a oh yeah, absolutely.
Well, Kevin, it's been great to chat. If there's nothing else, I'll let you get back to it. I'm sure you've got lots to be getting on with.
I do have some things to be getting on with, and I'm just making sure that all of our bases are covered and you're all good too.
Yeah, certainly. That was great. Loads of stuff in there as well. So great content.
Excellent. Well, I hope the second part of the thing gets in there where people can email me for my spare time. My spare time pile. I think I call it.
Yeah.
If people do want stuff for free, just have the subject line of spare time pile, and that will get to the right spot.
Venture into a land of walled cities, mountain strongholds, and dense forests. This is Valenheim. A land ruled by champions of the light, knights, templars, and wardens. But there are those who serve the darkness underneath. Bandits, thieves, and assassins. Even trolls and demonic mutants lurking in caves and swamps. And worse things yet. They all have their tale to tell in Valenheim, the fantasy audio drama anthology series. Find us at valenheim.com.
Hi folks, Robert here. Due to a clash of busy schedules, Matthew and I couldn't meet up in the car park for our usual rendezvous. I miss you, Snookums. But here's a little bit from me about Valenheim. As you probably know by now, that's the name of our new project, and it's a fantasy audio drama anthology series. It's going to be created and released for free on a Creative Commons license, and we'd really like it to be a collaborative project. That means we're looking for you to get involved. How? So glad you asked. Scriptwriters, we're looking for people to write scripts set in Valenheim. Ideally, they'd be self-contained short stories, although recurring characters, settings, and plot lines are welcome too. So please send us your script or synopsis or story outline, and we'll work with you to develop and fine-tune it before moving on to casting, recording, and production. For more information on this, ask us to send you a copy of our Valenheim writing guide. Voice actors. Having lots of stories with a wide range of characters means we'll always be looking for new voice talent. Interested? Then please send us a short demo, 2 minutes maximum, of you acting something out, just to give us a feel for your voice. But that's not all. Composers! Do you want to score some music for Valenheim? Then we'd love to hear from you. And artists! Fancy drawing a cover? Or some concept art for an episode? Get in touch. For more information, go to valenheim.com and click on Get Involved along the top of the page. That's all from me. I'm off to write another story. I hope you'll join me. Oh, God, no, we can't leave that in there. No, cut it there. See, this is why we need other writers.
I feel a bit like I should read a weather report after hearing that, Robert. That's about it, though, for this week. A huge thanks go to Messrs Hartnell and MacLeod for their wonderful insights. All the links from everything mentioned today can be found in the show notes over at audiodramaproduction.com. If you sent us an email recently at podcast@audiodramaproduction.com, we'll get back to the correspondence on next week's show, so we're not ignoring you or anything. And if you haven't sent us one, why not? podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. Oh, and one final thing. Tuesday has been renamed Reviews Day by yours truly. So each Tuesday, please consider taking 5 minutes out of your day to rate and review some of your favourite or most recently heard audio drama shows on iTunes or Stitcher. If we all do this every week, it'll make a huge difference in bumping shows up the rankings and getting audio dramas noticed and heard by the wider podcasting community. Right, that's it from me. Have a great week wherever you are and whatever you're up to. I played you the Valenheigh trailer earlier. Our friend Mr. Hartnell did feel that there was a few things missing, however. So I'm going to leave you with his own enhanced version. Cheerio.
In a world of darkness and...
What the fuck is that?
Hey! Hey, man, turn that shit off! Fuck. This is not the Audio Drama Production Podcast. What the hell are you guys doing? Yeah, that's what I said. Stop! Just... Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right.
Ah, much better. Now that is a world I can live in.